Hi, Vishesh. Welcome to the Big Unlock podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Very happy to host you. You're joining us from Nevada, Las Vegas. And it's such a fun place. I was recently there at HIMSS and we got to chat a bit.
So yes.
I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the managing partner and CEO at Demo Consulting and Big Rio, and also the host of this podcast. So would you like to start with some of your introduction, please?
Absolutely. No, thanks for having me on. It's good to communicate and be in touch again after the initial call some time ago. So for background, my name is Vishesh Mehta. I'm an interventional pulmonologist. As you said, I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm the director of interventional pulmonary at Comprehensive Cancer Centers of Nevada. That's where I practice. So we are a community practice, and as the name implies, large oncology presence. Me and my colleagues are the lung doctors or pulmonologists within that larger cancer organization. And we see large variety of pulmonary conditions, COPD, asthma, lung cancer, of course, infections, lung scarring, interstitial lung disease, so on and so forth. So it's been good to be here. I trained originally in New York City, and being in Las Vegas, of course, very different environment professionally, for sure.
Of course.
It's been good. And since I've been out, I've gotten involved a lot in digital health and pulmonology and medicine, newer emerging technologies, which have been very interesting to be a part of. I'm happy to talk about those and other things.
Yeah, of course, of course. So Vishesh, tell us a little bit of when and how did you get attracted on the tech side of things? And I guess you practice even today, right? So a large amount of your time is spent seeing patients. But on the other hand, you have this super interest in new technologies and AI, which we are going to talk about. So how did you get involved with that?
So as far as the AI thing, it started because one of the vendors wanted reached out to kind of just, you know, talk about their product. And I found that technology interesting. This is about 3-4 years ago now, but it did not seem ready for prime time. The concept was, you know, definitely intriguing. So I tried to educate myself more about what is AI, is AI here to stay or not in medicine and pulmonology? Is this something that will be at a technical level successful, but may or may not actually do anything for my patients? And then all different AI technologies are different, you know, even though it may look somewhat similar. Some of it is patient facing, some of it is not. So that's kind of how I got involved from the AI perspective. And as that happened, and then during COVID happened, we started doing a lot of telemedicine. So that's another exposure to digital aspects of medicine. And there are other technologies that are emerging, for example, functional imaging in lung diseases. So most of the normal imaging we do is static, as in a patient takes a breath, they hold the breath and we take a picture, chest x-ray or CAT scan. But functional imaging is new and emerging now, where you're able to see how different phases of breathing affect someone's lung. And that's information we did not have. So I will try to expose myself to these things because we just, you know, need to know. And it's also very interesting to know. And this is very nascent. I'm early in my career. These technologies are early in their deployment, development, and adoption. So it's something that I think will be a part of medicine going forward and a big part of how I'll be involved in medicine. So that's kind of the background.
That's very interesting that how your segue into AI and technology, you talked about telemedicine as well. So just curious to know on the telemedicine side of things, have you seen, obviously the numbers have significantly dropped of telemedicine visits, but are you still seeing a mix, Vishesh, on...
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Telemedicine is here to stay. And our patients like it. We like it. It works very well for the right scenario. Sometimes if a patient is coming back to follow up on some imaging or some other blood test, you know, they don't necessarily need to be in the office. We don't need to be sitting across each other physically. Yeah. We can do it just like how we are doing right now, right? Correct. Have a conversation, look at some labs, look at blood work, look at images, and make a decision. I've had patients do telemedicine appointments infrequently, but someone has done it from the park and the playground. A lot of people do it from home.
Yeah.
I've had a few times patients do it at the airport.
Yeah.
Routinely, patients have done it at their lunch break or at work. And so now, you know, you have a patient who doesn't have to miss work. They sometimes do not need someone to drive them to the visit. There is so much time saving. And then because it is easy, you can have telemedicine visits frequently.
Yeah.
I've had patients who've had bad flare-up of their COPD or asthma. We do a telemedicine visit. I'm able to get them the medicines they need. They don't end up going to the hospital. They don't have to come here. If they have an infection, others are not likely to get it outside of, you know, whoever else they're seeing. So our patients are also safe. It just works. So as a concept, yes, I think it's very useful, helpful, and definitely here to stay.
That's amazing to know. So the other curious question I have is something you said on functional medicine or functional
imaging. Yes.
Imaging, let's say.
Functional imaging.
So could you talk about that? Are the machines different? And
something
very new, and that means a lot more data, right? Because now you certainly have, instead of one static scenario, you have
long. Yes.
So how does that work? Yeah.
So functional imaging is very interesting. There's different parts to it. For example, we do a test called pulmonary function test.
Yes.
Typically called a breathing test. So patient will sit sometimes in this transparent box. Mm-hmm. The box is closed because we need to know some of the measurements, how they change, and we have to control the environment. So they have to sit in this box and they get coached and they have to do a series of breathing maneuvers. Take a deep breath in, deep breath out, blow hard, sometimes breathe normally. And those tests give us an assessment of how the lungs are functioning. That's why it's called pulmonary function test. We can see if someone has asthma, COPD. We can measure the size of the lungs. We can see what's the ability of the lungs to extract oxygen. And that is extremely helpful information. But there's no pictures involved. What also happens in that test is for each outcome or endpoint, we get a composite answer of both lungs combined.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's lung is, we sort of assume that the outcomes of these tests represent conditions that affect all parts of the lungs equally.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always true. Mm-hmm. Sometimes patients can have, and they do, they have emphysema more in the upper part of the lungs. We know this. There are other conditions that affect the edges of the lungs. There are other conditions that affect the bottom part of the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
But these tests are not able to tell that distinction.
I see.
The hope with the functional imaging is we are able to do testing that images the lungs in their entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And we can make out these differences in areas and understand if different parts are functioning differently. So that's very, very promising. And that's going to change how we have to look at some of our lung conditions. You know, you asked an excellent question, is do we have the hardware for this?
Yeah.
So there are some technologies where you need additional hardware.
Mm-hmm.
There are scanners using hyperpolarized xenon gas.
Mm-hmm.
So you need additional hardware. You need to hyperpolarize the xenon. And that's going to require, you know, capital investment and training and so on and so forth.
Right.
There are other imaging technologies where we use the existing scans.
Mm-hmm.
We have different protocols. And we have patients, again, simple example, take a deep breath in, do the scan, take a deep breath out, do the scan. And we see the breath in versus breath out, what the changes are.
Right.
So to do that kind of scan, we already have the technology. We do it routinely many times a day.
Okay.
But the protocol will be different. And we will need software or people capable of understanding the results as well to interpret the different analysis of the existing scans. So
right.
scan machine is the same, the protocol is different, and the interpretation is different.
The
hardware is the same. So that is very, that the leap to go there is very little compared to, you know, others. So these are again just some examples of where this is going.
Yes.
And I believe it is going to go, but, you know, it's just to be determined for now.
Sure.
But it's interesting and it's exciting that we have new things to be able to offer our patients.
Right. And Vishesh, talk with us about AI. You mentioned it couple of times, like what kind of AI is applicable in your area of practice and medicine?
So,
and what are you seeing there?
Yeah, AI in medicine, AI in pulmonology, we're seeing different parts of pulmonology being not affected by AI or AI showing up in different parts of pulmonology is probably a better way to put it. And where we see it most prominently is in lung cancer, loosely speaking. A lot of it is in early detection of lung cancer, or at least in the early identification of spots on the lung or lung nodules. Mm-hmm. So we know lung cancer is the most lethal cancer. Mm-hmm. We also know the survival is the best if it is caught early. And if it is caught early enough, we can be talking about cure, not just management.
You're right.
So we want to screen high-risk patients. So yes. For example, AI is helpful in identifying high-risk patients mm-hmm. by, at least right now, looking at the smoking history and abstracting that information from the chart and telling us, hey, these are the patients who are high risk because of smoking, they should be targeted for discussions about lung cancer screening. So that's one place we're seeing it. The other place is we know that a lot of patients get CAT scans constantly. Sometimes they have a CAT scan done of the abdomen and a small spot in the lung is seen in the bottom part of the lung, even though the scan was not done for that reason. We know if somebody had a scan of their thyroid, their neck, we can see a small portion of the upper part of the lung.
Right.
You may see a lung spot there, even though it was not done originally for that reason. So the AI software can identify these nodules, whether it's in the report, whether it's in the images, make a list for the hospital or the doctors. And again, say, hey, you know, these patients had these spots and let's try and see if these are important, concerning or not. So that's another place for seeing AI. We are also seeing it in trying to judge the risk of cancer in these spots. So a lot of people have lung spots, very common. Majority of them are not of concern. But we know that the AI can see and analyze information that we cannot see with our eyes, but that information exists on the scans. And it can help us judge whether this is cancer. It's not right now diagnosing cancer, but just judging the risk.
Yes.
So that's another place where AI is helping. That's kind of where we are seeing it in the lung cancer space, early detection space, to start with, for sure.
That's great. You say that on lung cancer screening, Vishisht. I have a curious question for you on that. Like in your health system or nationwide, you know, because I'm sure you're plugged into your fellow physicians in other places as well. What is currently the percentage of people who are eligible and actually get the screening? Like, is there a gap?
There is a massive gap.
Massive gap, okay.
There is a massive gap. It's probably the biggest gap in terms of how many are being screened versus how many are eligible for any given cancer. So the ballpark, we are screening about 5-6% of eligible patients. And that's a huge miss, you know, compared to some other cancers like colon or breast, where they're screening 70-80% approximately. Yeah.
So there's a big gap. That is where I was heading to. That any thoughts on why the gap is less there and more here?
Yeah, you know, at some level, lung cancer screening recommendations have been out for a while, but for whatever reason, they seem to not have percolated as much. I think the true number of patients who get lung scans is probably a little higher than this, because patients may be getting scans for reasons other than screening, which maybe are not being tracked. But there is no doubt that the gap is there. I think there's a lot of stigma also, because lung cancer, because of the association with smoking, has some amount of blame attached to it, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, we should not be blaming patients, certainly, for actions in the past. And if someone is eligible, we should have the discussion with them for lung cancer screening. One of the things to think about if you think about AI in this space is, AI is doing a lot of interesting things when we find the lung spot. But what about finding the patients who need to be screened?
Yes.
I think that's another place where AI is going to be able to help us. And I would also say we have to keep in mind that maybe the answer is not AI to improve lung cancer screening. You know, maybe we just need resources, education, manpower. Yes. That's another long discussion.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
We should not be thinking that AI is going to fix it when it could be many things that are likely to help move the needle.
No, that brings me to the point which we were talking about a little bit earlier, that you actually have a website and a video that you have put up for people to kind of learn more about this. And you mentioned pulmonary.ai, also a video on YouTube, right? So would you like to tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, for sure. Again, like 2-ish, maybe 3 years ago, when I was trying to get more details and get more involved, I said, let me go, I'll find AI and pulmonology resources. So I went online and I went looking and looking and looking, and I could not find anything where all the stuff that I was interested in was in one place. So I had to go and pull this article from here, that article from here, this clip from here to try and educate myself. And then I said, you know, why don't I try and make the place where I can post some of these articles? It's not going to be everything because it's impossible to keep up with that one-man army sort of. Yes. But to my surprise, pulmonary.ai, the domain was available. So I took it. Yeah. And I have been trying to add different pieces of pulmonary and AI literature, research articles in different areas. So other people who are interested in the subject like I am, don't have to run around as much. And at least they can go to this website and have a good start. This is not meant to be exhaustive and cover every possible thing. It's, again, it's not possible. But at least as a starting point, they can go on the website. I maintain it myself. There's no commercial. There's no ad. There's no sponsor. It's I pay for it myself. It's just my personal hobby and effort, you know, to find like-minded people. So that's what that is. And that effort helped me generate kind of my first large lecture on this, which was AI in pulmonary nodule management. That went on YouTube. I did that for Society for Advanced Bronchoscopy, wonderful medical society that I'm a part of. And a year later, the follow-up lecture, which is the one you're referring to, was which AI should I buy? Because after the first one, you know, we started to see so many different vendors show up in this lung nodule space. Yeah. And the question that I kept getting asked is, okay, which that's one? Fine. Which one? And not only which one, but how do I decide which one?
Yes.
So that led to the second one, which is which AI do I buy? And that's, of course, very, very, I think it's an important discussion. You know, sometimes people say is like, do I definitely need AI right now? I'm saying that I don't know if everyone definitely needs it, but I think the conversation should definitely be had to see whether AI software is the right fit for the lung cancer or the lung cancer detection workflow, because there's many challenges, right? Cost, integration, reimbursement. The other challenges are the physicians or the administrators or the nurse navigators. Do they know how to use the software? Do they understand the pros and cons? We do not want to have a problem of round peg and square hole. Things trying to fit when they're not supposed to. Fit is also very important. Right. So that's kind of what I speak about, of mostly the how rather than the what. Because it's not for me to tell any one person that this is better or that is better, so on and so forth.
That's a fabulous initiative. And
thank you.
You know, we'll try and when we do the actual podcast, we'll see if we can put the links in there for the...
Certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is a nugget, you know, maybe one or two things from that video that you made, which AI, right? You said, which AI should I buy? What, any one thing or two things you would like to share here?
So that's a very hard question. Yeah. So I think one thing that's important and that I've realized is physicians, administrators, you know, whoever is interacting with the software or making purchasing decisions, they need to have a basic level of understanding of what they're interacting with. So even when we routinely would read research articles, we've not, and for obvious reasons, because AI was not there, we've not been familiar with the terms needed to judge AI literature. So when you look at an AI paper, you have to look at or be familiar with terms like structured, unstructured data, supervised, unsupervised learning. What was the development? What was the deployment? Internal validation, external validation. Yes. So I think one takeaway would be to familiarize oneself with those kinds of things. Where can you go? And shameless plug, my lecture is one place someone can start, but that's not the be all and end all. Yeah. There are resources online from some medical societies. MIT has a course on this. I've taken it. I think it's a very good course. Wow. Stanford has a course, and I think that is through Coursera. So there are places where we should go. So I think, I guess the one takeaway would be, if people are considering these technologies, then just to understand how they are different, so the right people are able to make the right decision for the right circumstance, if it is going to be some AI technology.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I think, Vishesh, we are almost coming to the end of the podcast today, and I'm hoping that we will have more conversations in the future, of course. Would you like to share any news, any other news announcements, or any closing remarks with the audience?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. And in closing, all I would say is that healthcare is evolving, changing, probably faster in the digital space than we have seen before.
Yes.
So I would just want my colleagues to go out there, educate themselves, listen to lectures, and follow, you know, folks like yourself, because a lot of the new information we're getting may not come from traditional medical societies, only because of speed, that things change faster than we are used to them changing before. And at the end of the day, being well informed as much as possible is important with these newer developments. So that's all I got. Thank you.